the shotgun there, blooded in the wheat. Oh, what do you know about living in turbulent brash fields, good crows in a scary sky. Homes, they wouldn't let him near. He'd piss in their fireplace. He'd drag them through turbulent indigo.
Welcome to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local. I'm Laura Wenis, as usual, in here with you on this fine Thursday morning. And joining me today to talk about art through the ages in San Francisco is Dogpaw Carrillo. He's been here for, what, your whole life? And you've been doing art almost as long. Dogpaw, welcome.
Thank you. And I just want to say, this should be television because we're in a place right now where, you know, we've done radio before, but we've never seen a booth quite as interesting. It looks like you're in somebody's
It's like
house
a it's a blast something. From the past, from many different pasts,
right,
I would
right.
say. This is quite an eclectic collection that's in here. Listeners, if there are any, you're welcome to join us one day in our studio up here at BFF.fm.
Yeah, it's quite the art environment. You know, I like the ship or part of the ship.
Yeah, we're in a ship right now. Mm-hmm. Although the show before us likes to go upstairs into their helicopter and do a weather report from the helicopter.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Anyway.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you start by taking us back to when you were growing up and describe for me the art scene in San Francisco that you remember when you were starting out?
Well, you know, we're in a time right now in San Francisco where there's this 50th anniversary fervor on this moment that we had a long time ago when I was just a kid. Summer of Love, you know, seems to be a focus right now.
Yeah.
And what we saw was what happened after the said Summer of Love. You
mm-hmm.
know? And
it wasn't just the summer?
It wasn't just the summer. It was actually like a couple of weekends, maybe a month at the most, you know.
So not even a whole summer.
No.
Humanity can't keep up love for an entire summer.
It's just that, yeah, I remember seeing the funeral for Hippie.
Yes.
And we just happened to be on our stingrays in the hate, like, whoa, they're burying somebody. And it was Hippie, so all of that was already done, and the Grey Line buses were coming through with the tours, and
mm-hmm.
so it was very different. You know, a lot of veterans were coming back from the war,
yeah,
and a lot of folks just weren't having the whole the flowers and the all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very conservative town at the time. You know, a lot of times people think that, you know, everybody was a hippie in the 60s, and the term hippie hadn't even happened yet. You know, Herb Cain hadn't coined that yet.
They were already having a funeral for it before they even really coined it?
I think he had just done that, and they said, oh, okay, well, that's that.
Now it's
you
dead.
Know, now we got to go now, and so
yeah.
created something else.
Did that mean anything to you when you saw it? I mean, did the term hippie and that it was being declared dead, was that significant at all?
No, I mean, you know, you're like 10 years old,
yeah.
and it was a very, very musical town, and so it was just a little blip on the on the radar, you know, hardly noticeable. Mm-hmm. I remember the diggers feeding people, you know, before the food not bombs, you know, you had this group of people called the diggers, and they would, you know, get a lot of the surplus food, you know, restaurants, etc., and feed the runaway culture, which is what it really, really was, you know. And it wasn't always fun. You know, these are kids, you know, who for whatever reason were escaping, you know, where they were from. There was no peace and love there. It was just a different world. And so, and sadly, the Summer of Love has a lot of cold case files at 850 Bryant, you know, folks that just sadly disappeared. The Barbary Coast was still a very real thing in the 60s in San Francisco. It just kind of changed. Maybe put on a suit and tie, perhaps, you know, and you had human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And so that's the dark side of that period, you know. But for me, it was different. You know, we were out in the mission, and, you know, it's nice all the time. So we were outside all the time. And one of the things that we encountered was street art. And that's where I first saw Michael, a young and immortal Michael Rios, on the streets of the mission on 23rd.
On 23rd Street.
And Folsom is where the first mural actually appeared.
Of Michael Rios?
Uh-huh. Well, there's a debate between Spain Rodriguez, who painted another one for Horizons Unlimited,
uh-huh,
on Folsom and 26. So they were like right down the street from each other.
Got it. So know? There's a little bit of a... I mean, I'm sure it's hard to claim the first mural in the mission
they,
for
they
any
really didn't
person.
Think that way. Just the fact that it was up and unique, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and that first piece was like an homage to the underground comic scene that was going on at the time. R. Crumb. They worked with R. Crumb.
Both of them?
Let me see. They did a mural at Mission Rebels, which is on South Van Ness.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a collective of artists, you know, R. Crumb, Michael Rios. I think Spain worked on that. I'm not sure. Chuy Campuzano, who's another mentor of mine. And so each of these guys brought something to me as a kid, you know. And I'm just fully, fully grateful that I was, you know, born at the right time in the right place
to
know?
Witness the rise of that. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And what did it, you know, what did it look like? And I guess for art, I should ask, what did it feel like to see this on the street, you know, in the context of whatever was going on at that time in the neighborhood, politically, socially, you know, what was this art for?
Well, a lot of times, most of the time, it was social commentary. The piece that I just described, seeing for the first time, Michael Rios, it was the Mission District, but it was a like an underground comics version of life in the Mission District, right? The towers on Twin Peaks hadn't been built yet, you know, at least the Sutro Tower hadn't been built yet. Life in prison, you know, the people were... How did it go? They were rats, and the police were pigs.
Oh,
and so it was you know, that period where you had Fritz the Cat, mm-hmm, and Ralph Bakshi and all this kind of Baudet and everybody, you know.
Yeah, so, my generation knows that kind of humans as animals, I think, mostly from Mouse.
Oh, right.
The sort of World War II,
right,
Germany memoir, I guess.
And, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and the film Animal Farm.
That's right, yes.
Right?
Of course.
So that's
books.
Always been a part of the scene, you know. And mm-hmm, so didn't know a world otherwise as far as street art goes. I mean, there were enough pretty art in the galleries and the museums. And so this was a little different, you know. It was a time of the Panthers, you know, and you had the Brown Berets, and you had all this free speech still going on pretty strongly, right? Nixon toilet paper. It was that world, you know. And so it was normal, you know. So I'm very, again, you know, very glad that I had these incredible adults that we could be with and later party with.
Well, and make art with. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, how did you get into the scene? I mean, did you just wake up one day and decide I'm going to do this too?
I mean, well, I was a commercial art major in school, and that only because album cover art was such a big, big part of music at that point.
Yeah,
I thought I was going to do that, you know. And they took us to I think it was Gray Advertising in downtown San Francisco to see what the future was going to be for us, and it just hated it. Just didn't, I didn't understand why it had to be that way in order to create art, you know, compared to street art where you're in the street, you know, or if you're lucky to have a space. And a lot of times folks had, you know, just these really cool spaces to create in, unlike now, you know.
There's no cool spaces to create in now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just they're not as accessible to as many people as it once was.
Yeah, I was going to ask about galleries because you mentioned galleries and sort of where the art was at that time and whether it was any more or less accessible than it is now. I mean, I think a lot of people don't spend a lot of their time unless they're particularly interested in art mm-hmm. in galleries or in museums. I mean, maybe at the larger museums, you know, a lot of people go because they feel like they have to have seen it. Mm-hmm. But do you get the sense that the accessibility of art, particularly politically relevant art, has gotten any different over time?
Oh, it's intensified, I think. Of course, we live in the Mission District and we have such a high concentration of artists.
That's true.
Probably the most in the whole city. Yeah, you know, and so you can't swing a dead cat without hitting somebody that's creating something, you know? And that's good, you know? It kind of reminds me of the guitar slinger era in the Mission, where every block had some kind of, you know, Latin rock, you know, band, you know, garage action going on, you know? And that was normal, actually. And if it seemed like there was a garage band on every block, it's probably because there was, you know, just... which was another part of street art, you know. It was just this other component. A lot of these guys played, you know, and they had bands of their own. And so it was this back and forth. It was a really nice, teeter-totter, this balance, you know, that most artists should do. Be nice, you know?
Yeah, branch out into different mm-hmm. kinds of art. Mm-hmm. But did you do that too?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah,
there was a lot.
Well, there's a lot of drumming at Dolores Park
yes.
a long time ago. like every Sunday you could be guaranteed to see these amazing players, you know, just authentic Afro-Cuban drumming, you know, Armando Peraza, the Escobedo brothers, just all these people that were playing with Santana and just like these huge bands. And so,
yeah. You know, you were saying earlier that you sort of saw commercial art and then decided that's not the direction you wanted to go in. But if I remember correctly, you have created posters mm-hmm. and art for a lot of, you know, well-known bands. Can you take us through your accolades there?
I guess there's different chapters. You know, early on, did a lot of poster work for, you know, Brazilian music and dance company, Batucaje, you know, became their in-house poster guy, you know, early Carnaval, right? Became a bike messenger, had an art collective there, or was part of an art collective there. You know, it's just a great time, you know, to create art. Literally street art, literally. You know, you're in the street all day and you're creating art afterwards, you know. Did a lot of bike messenger shows, you know, punk rock shows, you know, reggae and everything at a place called The Farm, also in the Mission. So we had that. And then later on when I was at KPFA, I did a bunch of stuff just on my own. You know, there was, it wasn't required and you have to pump out a poster all the time. And no, that was just out of the sheer need, you know? And so mm-hmm. created a bulk of work, there.
Your need or their need?
My need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, actually it was, related to the bands that I was booking, you know, and they would share the art with their following, and it was an interesting way of getting art out there, you know, where before I would print them, you know, and so. And they were at UC Berkeley for a bit, the Ethnic Studies Library. There was a nice show that ran for 6 months, believe it or not. You know, it was only supposed to be up there for a month, and somehow it just...
Just kept going.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, got to get your stuff out of here. You know, you got to go. It's time for the next one. That was great. I liked that one, you know. Yeah. And just to have the freedom to do that. Just creating imagery on my terms as I felt it applied, you know, to the other artists. So we were just had this back and forth, you know. Mm-hmm. Just amazing artists, you know, from the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually you started working with some of these artists that you mentioned earlier. I know you've done work with Michael Rios, for example, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how did that come about, and what sorts of things did you work on in that time?
Well, as I said, I was in high school, and there was I would escape school from time to time and go around the corner where there was, at the time, it was the San Francisco Boys Club. Now it's the San Francisco Boys and Girls Club on Alabama and 21st there. And I met Luis Cortazar, and they were looking at a project with the Bank of America, which was like a big deal. There was never had a corporation come in and said, hey, you artist people, we like what you do. And
is that really what they did? They came and sought it out?
I believe that's what happened, yeah.
Interesting.
You know, there was an interest in what was going on the streets, you know, in the Mission.
Yep.
And so I met Michael Rios through that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends ever since. I was in 74, 73.
Yeah, people, I want to spend a little time on this particular mural because I think a lot of people, if you're a Bank of America customer, you might have seen this mural, and it's pretty significant. It's large.
Mm-hmm.
It's above the teller's windows inside the 23rd Street Bank of America branch. And you know, if you don't go there regularly, it might be worth a visit. I think it's very interesting to have this sort of revolutionary spirited mural
mm-hmm.
inside a big corporate bank branch.
Right.
It's almost a little bit of a contradiction when you first see it, but it's worth going because there's a lot there to explore. And I think it's an interesting history of how it got there too, because it was actually painted somewhere completely different, right?
Yeah, it was painted in the Fillmore District, in an old Bank of America that they weren't using as a bank. Which was one of the greater experiences, being that young and seeing the Fillmore in its heyday. It was very gritty and very real, you know, just the pimps and the street people. And we were next door to the old Powell's Place, which is an old legacy business in the Fillmore.
Mm-hmm.
Emmett Powell, who's a gospel, he's got the Emmett Powell and the Gospel Elites, who's a very, very successful group, and they tour the world. And he's on KPFA, and also on KPOO, you know, shameless plug for my friend Emmett. Just a great experience,
yeah.
You know. And, of course, to have Emmylou Packard, apprentice to Diego Rivera, come in every week or two to kind of guide us through the style of the painting, which was an homage to David Alfaro Siqueiros, who's one of the three major giants in Mexican mural, the Mexican mural universe.
What kind of guidance did she give you?
Well, you know, with the younger ones, there was five of us, you know, all from different schools. She emphasized just follow the force, you know, use it literally, you know. She was a Jedi, you know, then, and you know, just fostered this confidence, really.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most important, I think, thing that I got from her. Whereas the main drivers of the project, you know, was just emphasizing on how to best honor the style of the David Siqueiros.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But just a great lady. I mean, she had so much history, you know, just in San Francisco, you know, New York, you know. Again, for folks that don't know, she's the photographer also that photographed a lot of these iconic photographs of Diego and Frida.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had that. She was just a real force.
Tell me about some of the, you know, symbols and some of the imagery in the mural and where those came from.
Well, okay, let's see. One that I do tours, by the way, and I bring people through there from mm-hmm. time to time. Mm-hmm. High school students a lot, you know, these days. And there's always that question of that one scene in the mural where there's a book and there's writing in the book, and this person's holding the book, and it says, our blood and our sweat have fallen on this land to make other men rich. And you're in a bank, and it's Bank of America Bank, like, you know, and they always point that out. How do you do that? How can I do that? I want to do that. And it's very rare, you know. The images had to be changed at least twice before they actually accepted it as being, you know, something that they would sanction and not feel, you know, embarrassed about in any way.
But that's an element that they allowed you to keep.
Yeah. We had a moment with Emmylou. At the time, Patty Hearst had just gotten abducted by the Symbionese Liberation Army. And that was a very new thing. It was still fresh, you know, we had just started. And somebody was outside with SLA stickers, and they gave one to Emmylou. And she came in, and she's looking at it, and she showed it to us, and we were like, oh, wow, you know, as kids, as a young man, you know, whoa, that's pretty badass. I want, you know, the snake with the heads, you know, just, I want, you want that? She gave it to me. I lost it. I should have kept it. But what happened was that it was painted. I painted it on the, a part of the mural, and it was up there for months, and nobody really cared. They just kind of figured, well, you know, it's, I wonder how long this is going to last. And so ultimately it got whitewashed. You know, it was actually pretty funny, you know, when it happened. You know, it's just, oh, it's a wonderful mural. It's a beautiful mural. Oh, just outstanding job. And, you know, and on the way out, you know. And, oh, by the way.
Can't you take that part out?
Yeah, you got to take that snake out of there. So, you know, we kind of saw it coming. But,
yeah.
And it survived, though. Somebody photographed it. I forget what book it is. It's in. A mural book, mm-hmm. And it's there. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm happy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What kind of reaction do you get from? I mean, you were just saying you do these tours, right? And a lot of the people who are on the tours of murals and art are high school students. Mm-hmm. And this was not something that was necessarily available to you in high school. Mm-hmm. What does it spark in them? I mean, what kind of responses do you get?
Oh, you know, you could see the wheels turning a lot of times. You know. A lot of it has to do with the language that you use to describe art, you know, and there's a specific language, I think, sometimes with younger people. You know, it's not just art, you know, it's earthquakes, it's displacement, it's fire, it's homelessness, mm-hmm. it's, you know, just the violence on the street, you know, with regards to, you know, just ordinary citizens and the police, you know. And so that paints this environment, you know. It's not as much fun, you know, as San Francisco. It's the life on the street in San Francisco. So to have all this art just everywhere can be a lighter of fires under young people, you know.
Yeah.
And so they get inspired, and next thing you know, they're at Perseid Eyes and, you know, painting murals too. That actually happens, you know. So I like to stress that art saves lives, you know, especially in these times more than ever.
What is that?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, just the cutting of resources for art and music in the schools. I remember a time being younger where we had that, or at least the beginning of that, you know, and we had a man named Bill Graham. Who was running around loose and unchecked and unregulated.
Now his name's on a building.
And so he did just this really great benefit for a lot of the schools, you know, a lot of, the teachers, you know, extracurricular activities, you know, sports and music and like that. And we sure could use somebody like that now, you know, just a real magician, that guy. And mm-hmm. so, but things come in a circle. You know, everything goes in a circle, and I really believe it. Sometimes it's hard, but I really believe that the best is yet to come. You know, we're just in a dark place right now.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, if art saves lives, it's going to need to save a lot of them right now.
Well, yeah, it seems to be a just this incredible threat to the powers that be, you know, underground music, punk rock, which I like to say it was like just some of the last part of that generation in San Francisco anyway, you know, just going on my own experience. Because you don't see that kind of radicalism as much. I know it's there. It's always going to be there. But it's just not as visible, I guess. I don't know. We'll see.
Who's doing the revolutionary stuff right now? Who do we need to keep an eye on?
Well, let me see. You got a couple of street art?
Who's going to lead the revolution artistically? Who's the threat to the powers that be?
Well, I don't know if the revolution really works that way where there's like a leader. I think it's more like a series of moments that lead to more series of moments. And at one point, I guess there's a critical mass, hopefully not violent, you know?
Yeah.
But we're here to kind of be the architects of pure moments.
All right.
Right? Isn't that cool?
I like that.
I like it too.
Well, talk about if someone wants to go on one of your tours, how do they do that?
Well, you can go to Proceed Eyes Murals. They're on the... Actually, you know what? I got a thing right here.
Okay.
And we're celebrating 40 years. Mm-hmm. Of Presida Eyes, and that's a very special for us. They're on 24th Street. I'm trying to see. My eyes are just not what they used to be. But if you go to info@presidaeyes.org or call them at 285-2287 in the 415, we can hook you up with a tour, and I'd like to do that. Take you all on a tour, for sure.
That sounds good. Dagpa, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Listen Local, the biweekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local. If you know something we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email. We're at info@missionlocal.org. You can also catch us on Twitter, where we're at ML Now. Thanks for listening.
I would paint my reverie if that's the only way for you to be with me. We'd be there together just like we used to be. Underneath the swirling skies for all to see. And I'm dreaming of a place where I could see your face. Inside the swirling skies to be.